We are listening to Lou Pollock's High Stepper Rag.
I thought that's what this was.
You have a very fine ear.
Yep.
Yep, that's a Lou Pollock original for you. Okay, there's a picture of a horse on the High Stepper Rag website, which is YouTube. And I don't know, I assumed the High Stepper was a person. You know, like the 90s song, Here Comes the High Stepper. But it makes sense that a High Stepper would be a horse.
Yeah.
So, do you think this was originally...
It was composed...
This is for a horse. This is a horse song.
Yeah, a horse is dancing to this right now.
Okay. And then later on in the 90s, thanks to like Jamaican dancehall music, we decided that a High Stepper was a person.
Well, I have a question for you. Now, this is the second week in a row we've had a ragtime song.
Yes.
Is ragtime the only music you're aware of from 1917? Like, do you assume that the only music I was listening to was stuff that was played on piano?
It's not necessarily the only stuff, but it sounds a lot like what you think 1917 sounds like.
Is that a little older? This sounds like more like Old West kind of thing.
Okay, I can see the Old West. Did you watch Westworld?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, this sounds like something that would be from Westworld.
Yeah. But also, that was a picture being like the soundtrack of a silent film.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
You know how silent films worked? It's really fascinating. I've done a lot of research on this for a project I will hopefully be able to talk about later. But the silent film organists weren't given a score. They could just make up whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
And so sometimes they played the same songs over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the biggest organists at the time, Carl Stalling, he would always play the same songs whenever something came on. When people were eating, he had an eating song.
Yeah.
And when people were like hit over the head and were about to like pass out, he would start to play Rock-a-Bye Baby,
mm-hmm,
as a joke, and the audience would laugh. And that's where the cartoons got the idea from, because he moved over into doing cartoons. So whenever, like, if I hit you over the head with a mallet or an anvil, you would start hearing Rock-a-Bye Baby,
mm-hmm,
because that's what happens in cartoons, and that's because of Carl Stalling, and that is because of silent films.
You know, nobody ever thinks about the organist stuff put out of work.
They did.
They
definitely did. It was like the buggy whip all over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like being an organist was like one of the like most prominent jobs you could have at the time. That and dog catcher, I'm assuming, just based on cartoons, where dog catcher is the number one occupation.
I read a fascinating book called Middletown, and that took place in like 10 years from 1917. It took place in like the 20s, but it was explaining how back in the olden days, in this book's timeline, if you were a big, strong guy, that was your job. Like, your job was just, I pick up heavy things and I move them around.
They need a guy to do that.
Yes, and this was before the railroad. This was basically before the horse was invented. Mm-hmm. This was before cranes were around. And all of a sudden, as these inventions came in, and things like canals and trucks.
See, imagine there was like a 6'3", 250-pound brilliant physicist,
mm-hmm,
that was not allowed to reach his potential.
And then he had to go into the sciences because he couldn't just pick stuff up.
Yeah, he just had a lug. Like, he wanted to, you know, explore his love of STEM. And instead, he just had to lug.
That's where Richard Feynman got his start. He was originally going to be a wrestler, but then he couldn't do it because they just didn't need any giant guys. So he had to go to his backup career as physicist. So
you know what I like about you? You had the name of a physicist right in your back pocket like that.
I had the name of many physicists. I could have gone Enrico Fermi. I could have gone, I was going to say a guy with a hyphenated name, and all I can think of is Paul Benvictor. Paul Benvictor is the actor who played Mo Howard in the Three Stooges movie. That's my go-to physicist, the guy who played Mo Howard.
Wait, which Three Stooges? Not the one that was later on with, but the, oh, no. The one with the commish played.
Yeah, the one with the commish.
Michael Chiklis played Curly.
Yes,
yeah.
And if you have ever seen there's a Dwayne Johnson movie called Empire State. It's not a very good movie,
mm-hmm,
but both Paul Benvictor and Chris Diamantopoulos are in it. Mm-hmm. That's two Mo Howards. There's never been a movie with two Mo Howards before.
I imagine there was a Three Stooges short that probably had like some kind of like Mo doppelganger mix up.
I say, it looks just like me. Hit him.
Well, regularly, the Three Stooges would often fall in love with themselves dressed as women.
Yes. I have terrible news for you, though. The Three Stooges began after 1917.
We'll never get to talk about them.
No. Not unless we talk about them every week, just incidentally.
Well, I mean, no, hold on. They were alive in 1917.
Yes, and they were probably doing their act in vaudeville, but they hadn't moved mm-hmm. over to the big screen.
All right, so this week's history, 21-year-old Mo Howard traveled to Schenectady.
We should officially say hello to everyone. Ahoy hoy, and welcome to 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Ryan. Joining me as always is Vinny Nardiello.
Ahoy hoy to you, Jeff.
Our sponsor this week is Keplin Bread. Slim, graceful bodies for women. Women who are too fat or too thin should immediately begin to eat Keplin Bread. Beautiful, graceful bodies are impossible without sufficient vegetable iodine. That's Keplin Bread. When you think Keplin Bread, think iodine.
May cause miscarriages.
That was, of course, an actual ad from the 1917 era. I don't know what Keplin Bread is. I don't know what vegetable iodine is. Mm-hmm. I think it may just be regular iodine.
I'm trying to see the photograph that goes along with this. Because I want to see what the ideal woman body would be, according to Keplin Bread. Not too fat, not too skinny.
That's interesting, because people... views on beauty change. You know, a rounder figure was big one time, yeah. And then a thinner figure, and we're entering the flapper era, so you'd think thin would be the big thing.
The flapper dress seems to favor a thin body.
Right. I'm Googling it, and all that's coming up is bread.
It's pictures of bread. Is Keplin still in business?
I don't think so. If their big thing is we put iodine in our dough...
It may have evolved. I don't know that. You change your original recipe. I imagine when they switched over, it was like new Coke kind of controversy. Like, people like up in arms because they missed the iodine taste.
I am Googling iodine and bread. I'm just getting pictures of bread and pictures of goiters. And I don't want to look at this anymore. So, we're going to start off the week with a couple of news items that have been going on the second week of January, which is January 8th through 14th. Of 1917. January 9th was the Battle of Rafa. Now, my idea of World War I, which I got, I believe, from an episode of The Waltons, which I watched growing up, mm-hmm. and this was not a big budget episode of The Waltons, so they needed to do World War I like on the cheap.
Yeah.
So
basically, it'd be like John Boy looking out a window at World War I while it took place off camera.
It wasn't even that. They had dug like a 6-inch trench, mm-hmm. and then they just put the dirt on top. So you have a 6-inch berm and then a 6-inch trench. And John Boy, or whoever it was just lying on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a gun, and he put it on the berm, and he was aiming it off screen. You didn't see what it was. And it was just like in a backyard somewhere, and it was supposed to be,
cars on the highway behind him.
And it was night, because that makes it even worse, and he was just stuck there. And you could hear bullets coming in, and he would occasionally shoot his gun, and his job was just to not leave. He couldn't abandon his post.
Now, I don't know much about the Waltons. I really didn't watch it at all. It was like on some reruns when I was a kid. It was pretty much off the air when we were growing up. Mm-hmm. So now I'll tell this. I teach high school, and so one time there's this older teacher.
Yeah.
Probably a guy about 60 years old. This is a couple of years ago. I'm walking by in the hallway. And I hear him talking to a student who's like 15, 16, something like that. And all I hear is this part of the conversation. What? You mean you've never seen the Waltons?
Finger on the pulse of youth.
He was flabbergasted. Why are these kids not watching the Waltons? I mean, they're fucking participation trophies, not watching Waltons.
Did you say something like, I was born in 2004? Because I think that would be the appropriate response to it. Why have you not watched the Waltons?
Now, the Waltons have nothing to do with Sam Walton, do they?
No, unrelated. But I bring up the Waltons because that version of World War One, lying in like a fake trench just shooting guns, apparently is what the real Battle of Rafah was like.
You like people lying in fake trenches?
Well, it was real trenches, but this was in the desert, so there wasn't much digging you could do. You couldn't build an actual real trench, and the lines kept on moving. It wasn't like up in France where the lines stayed the same for years at a time, and it was just this terrible attrition of, we'll just keep sending people in and killing each other, and we'll wait until one person runs out of bodies.
I'll be honest, war is so horrible sounding to me, and, you know, even just digging the trench sounds horrible. Like, I don't think I would make it to the battle. Because, you know, I would have given up somewhere around the time I, like, had to start digging.
Would you even make it there? Would you make it out of basic training?
Well, you know, my grandfather was a drill sergeant. And,
really?
Yeah, yeah. Not for World War One, or World War Two, he's a drill sergeant.
And, Ace was?
Yes. Ace Nardiello. And I want to say that has not trickled down. That discipline.
It skipped a generation.
I don't know. I don't know if it made it to my father, to be honest with you. So I wouldn't even say it skipped, because that would be me. I would be the good generation. I just think it ended with him.
So I did not hear about the Battle of Rafah, and it turns out that's because Americans weren't in it. But just about everyone else in the world was in it. There were New Zealanders, there were Englishmen, there were Ottomans, mm-hmm. there were Egyptians, and Australians.
Now, why were New Zealand and Australia involved in this war?
It was a world war. They got the invite. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a world war unless all continents are taking part.
No, like, they'd be like, you know, why were the Australians even involved in this?
I think they just didn't get the invite. Or maybe they got and was like, ah, sorry, mate. I never got it. Shrimp on the barbie.
That was a little, like, Bostonian, actually.
I've never been to Australia. I met one Australian, but she refused to speak in her actual accent. She adopted an American accent.
Really?
Yeah.
That's disappointing.
And then she said she didn't really remember the accent.
How do you know she's really Australian?
Oh, she could be fake Australian.
Yeah, I could be like, oh, I'm actually Australian, but I took a guy from Jersey just to throw people off. I'm like Anthony LaPaglia.
So, other events going on this week in the world in 1917. Austro-Hungarian troops invaded Forlani, Italy. Uh-huh. I've never been to Italy. Sorry, Forlani. 100-year anniversary.
I have, but I don't know where Forlani is.
Here's something. Do you know P.G. Wodehouse?
No.
Have you ever heard of P.J. Wodehouse?
No. It sounds like I don't know, is that like an H.P. Lovecraft kind of thing? Is that similar?
They were both writers, and they were both alive 100 years ago, but okay. No, it's mostly separate.
All right.
Okay, P.G. Wodehouse is best known for the Jeeves and Wooster series. Do you know that?
All right, hold on. I don't. I'm going to guess that Jeeves is a butler.
Yes!
All right.
Oh, wait, no. Maybe Wooster is the butler. I haven't read it yet.
No, hold on. Jeeves has to be the butler.
Okay, yeah, because I've asked Jeeves. Yeah.
Well, I guess every butler is named Jeeves in every old movie or
I'm now cartoon. Realizing the whole Ask Jeeves thing was based on P.G. Wodehouse.
Yeah.
And I didn't get that
until right
now.
Never made that connection?
No, I never made that connection. Like you, I just assumed Jeeves was the name of every butler. Mm-hmm. It wasn't calling back to any one particular butler. But I assume that that's just what he did. He wrote those books. But I looked up, he wrote close to 100 books. Mm-hmm. And he was a very accomplished playwright. And one of his plays called Have a Heart opened up this week. Mm-hmm. It didn't run for very long. And he wrote a bunch of other things. And then he moved on to Jeeves and Wooster.
What is Jeeves and Wooster? Is it a book series?
It's a series of short novels about a butler who takes care of his very foppish, twitty master.
Who would be Wooster?
Who would be Wooster? Okay. Yeah, Bertie Wooster. I'm not sure how I know that.
You know a lot about this for something that you've never read, by the way.
Sometimes facts just stick in my head. It's like what you were talking about last week with Lawrence of Arabia. I feel like I could convincingly BS someone that I had read a book or watched a movie when I hadn't, because I'm able to hold on to a lot of the collective information.
Yeah.
Apparently not the thing about Jeeves being the butler, mm-hmm. because you knew that, and I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Also going on this week, Buffalo Bill Cody sadly died. He died at the age of 70. I get him mixed up with Wild Bill Hickok quite often.
Or Buffalo Bill from Sounds All Over.
Good
piece of lotion in the basket.
Wait, oh, what? That's an awful. That's awful. You know, I have the ability to edit that out, and I'm not going to because I'm punishing myself for that.
Let me try one.
Okay, okay.
Would you fuck me? I'd fuck me.
You didn't go with put the lotion in the basket?
No, no, I'm going more with like right now, you guys can't see it because it's radio. My penis is between my legs. And I'm dancing.
You know, I was about to explain your hand motions, but you went whole hog.
Yeah.
And I didn't even mean to pun there. So Buffalo.
No, one, all right. So which one died with the aces and eights? Was that Wild Bill or
that was Bill? Yeah, Bill? That was Wild.
That was Bill. Wild Bill. Okay.
Yeah, and he died in Deadwood, mm-hmm. like the show and the real life town.
Okay.
In South Dakota, but it was not South Dakota back then. It was unincorporated territory near Yankton. Because they talked about Yankton a lot in the second and third seasons. And it just seemed like a weird name for a town.
South Dakota, is that where didn't we learn how to fly fish there?
We did go to South Dakota. We did see a fly fishing tournament. This is a road trip we went on years ago. But I don't think we actually fished.
No, we didn't fish, but we were casting. We were learning.
I don't remember casting.
I think there was some casting going on.
I think you have a false memory of this. Although I'm not going to co-sign on this false memory. I like the idea of us casting and fly fishing.
I'm not going to question your memory because you seem to know a lot about other things, which I forgot already. Roadhouse. I've already forgot.
Yes, exactly. PG Roadhouse. Starring Patrick Swayze. Oh, that's such a good idea. For a comedy sketch that no one is going to get. PG Roadhouse, where you mix up Jeeves and Wooster and Patrick Swayze?
You're right, that'll appeal to nobody. Good call there.
So, the big story this week, the big news item from 100 years ago today, takes place right here in New Jersey. I'm not sure if most listeners are aware of it, but if you take one listen to Vinny's voice, you can tell he is from New Jersey. I am also from New Jersey. We're broadcasting from New Jersey.
Well, you've noticed you live in Jersey. You lived in Jersey most of your life, but you have a little bit of that like Green Bay thing going on there.
I was in Green Bay for a couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like a solidly Midwestern type.
I'll fess up to that. Mm-hmm. I have a certain Ned Flanders streak in me.
Yeah.
But the news we're talking about today is the Kingsland explosion. I had not heard of this. And we were talking before we started the broadcast about this. Vinny hadn't heard of it either. But it takes place in Lyndhurst, New Jersey, which is just a couple miles away from
this. Yes.
This was apparently one of the key events that got us into World War I, yet we don't know about it. And it was in our backyard. Which seems strange that something so important could be forgotten.
You would think people would, you know, be bringing this up all the time,
right?
In this area, instead, Lyndhurst, like, oh, Lyndhurst, that's medieval times is in Lyndhurst, isn't it? Like, that's what Lyndhurst is, known for mostly now.
Yes, yes. If you want to see horses jousting each other, you can go
high stepping horses.
You can go to Lyndhurst, New Jersey. But 100 years ago, if you went there on the cold night of January 11th, you would have seen a munitions plant. This was making shells, not for us, because America was not in the war yet, but we were making shells for the UK and for Russia. We made 3 million shells a month, which is a lot of ammunition. And we took shipments from other munition plants. So we were like a warehouse full of ammunition. But it was, I think there was over 30 different buildings and outbuildings in this complex. So it was enormous. If you wanted to set off an explosion, this would be the place to do it. There was a 6-foot fence around it. And if you worked there...
6-foot fence? That doesn't seem that high.
Okay. You're right. It doesn't seem that high.
No.
That's a very scalable fence.
Yeah.
But...
Like, I'm pretty sure at my age, my weight, I can still scale that fence.
Well, how about this? You weren't allowed to smoke cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you were able to smoke just about anywhere in 1917. Yeah. Men, women, kids, babies, everyone was smoking. Mm-hmm. Doctors recommended Chesterfields.
Yeah.
But you couldn't smoke for the very good reason that matches and explosives are not a good idea. So cigarettes weren't allowed. Matches weren't even allowed. The explosion took place in Building 30. It was used exclusively for cleaning out shells. There were 48 workbenches in Building 30. On the bench in front of each employee, if you can try to picture this, was a pan of gasoline. Mm-hmm. And the job was you were to take a shell, you dust it off with a brush, then you moistened a cloth in gasoline, you wrap it around a foot-long piece of wood, and then you insert it into the shell the same way that you would clean out like a clarinet or an oboe or a recorder. And then you'd put it in a rotating machine, the shell in a rotating machine. The wood was dried as best you could. Then you dried it off with a dry cloth. So
this sounds like among the shittiest jobs you could possibly have.
Everything involved is flammable. Yeah. You have cloth, you have wood. You're basically soaking both of them in raw gasoline, and then you're going to fill it with explosive powder.
I can't imagine that anybody, you know, who blew up here, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
When they called the their family, when they went to tell them, nobody was surprised by this, right?
I'm surprised this isn't like a daily occurrence.
Yeah, like that. You know, no wonder nobody remembers the Kings of Explosion. This may have been a weekly occurrence there. You're right. Like, something that happens, like, very frequently there.
So, the...
Next week's show might be about the other Kings of Explosion.
It's a regular series.
Yeah.
The whole podcast is just about all of the different King of Explosions over the years. So, the Mrs. O'Leary's cow of the Kingsland Explosion was a man named Theodore Wozniak. Mm-hmm. I know Steve Wozniak. I don't know Theodore Wozniak. So maybe it's for the best.
His dopey uncle.
Yeah, the Wozniak family is remembered for Steve Wozniak and not for this other Woz.
Mm-hmm.
So here is a testimony from the foreman, Morris Chester Musson. And
why did everybody have such better names back then?
Yeah. I am going to imagine this as Foreman Morris Chestnut myself. You guys can feel free to imagine, too. I noticed that this man Wozniak...
You're not going to go for a Morris Chestnut impression?
No, because I want to stay in the air.
Okay.
I noticed that this man Wozniak had quite a large collection of rags, and that the blaze started in these rags. I also noticed that he had spilled his pan of alcohol all over the table just preceding that time. I also noticed that someone threw a pail of liquid on the rags of the table almost immediately in the confusion. I am not able to state whether this was water or one of the pails of refuse alcohol under the table. My recollection, however, is that there were no pails of water in the building, the fire buckets being filled with sand. Whatever the liquid was, it caused the fire to spread very rapidly, and the flames dropped down on the floor. In a few minutes, the entire place was in a blaze. It was my firm conviction from what I saw, and I stated, that the place was set on fire purposely. That has always been and is my firm belief.
By Wozniak, did it?
By Wozniak, yeah. So he started a small fire, and then he picked up a bucket of gasoline and threw it on oily rags
To
put the fire out.
Now, it's one of those things that's so stupid that I hope it was done on purpose.
But at the same time, I could see that being done by accident.
Here's what I'm picturing. I'm picturing it was a total accident. And they're like, Wozniak, you moron. He's like, no, I'm a saboteur. I'm doing this on purpose. Yeah, I'm not that stupid.
We've all heard the story about the guy who had a gun and a phone on his bedside table. And the phone rang early in the morning, and he picked up the gun and put it to his head, and muscle memory is like, well, I know what to do when I'm holding this in my hand, and he shot himself in the head.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, but it feels true.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this would be the same thing. If you see a fire and you see a bucket of liquid, even though your brain is like, that is a bucket of gasoline, you've worked here 2 years, you should know that, you'd be like, oh, I can help. Watch me help. So, there was a Mrs. O'Leary's cow of the Kingsland explosion, but there was also a Molly Pitcher of the explosion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anyone outside of New Jersey knows who Molly Pitcher is.
Well, she has the rest stop.
Yes, she has the rest stop, so we all mm-hmm. Googled her to find out who she is.
Yes.
Why Molly Pitcher
is. She's most famous for a rest stop where gay men secretly meet up.
But
to give anonymous handjobs.
The Molly Pitcher legend was that there was a woman named... Or I don't know what her real name was, but her nickname was Molly Pitcher, and she had a pitcher of water, and she was pouring
Lucy
it.
Bucket.
Molly Pitcher's real name is Lucy Bucket.
Yes, right. Yes.
So the legend says Molly Pitcher had a bucket of water, or a pitcher, I guess, because that would make more sense. And she was pouring it down the cannons in the Revolutionary War during like the Battle of Monmouth or something. And because of that, they were able to fire more more accurately. Now, this is just a legend because people didn't start telling this until 50 years after the Revolutionary War, but it's still a nice legend, so we named a place where you stop for emergency dumps after her.
Yes.
Anyways, so the Molly Pitcher of North Jersey is named Tessie McNamara. I will read you from the Lyndhurst, New Jersey Historical Society's retelling of the event. A heroine emerged the day of the fire. Kingsland resident Tessie McNamara, who operated the company's switchboard, was credited with saving many lives. As the fire raged on, Tessie stayed at the switchboard that Thursday afternoon. She plugged in each of the buildings and shouted the warning, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Get out or go up. Thanks to her dedication, no one was killed in the fire.
I was hoping for an impression on that one.
I think I'm going to stay away from impressions unless I'm very confident that I've got my ball on it.
Get up or go up.
Now, what's interesting
is it
about...
get out or get up?
It's get out or go up.
Get out. Okay.
Now, I think if there was a series of explosions in the building next to mine, I wouldn't need to wait for the intercom to say, you know, maybe it's time to evacuate.
Again, common occurrence.
Yes. And I would think especially if you're working in mm-hmm. basically an explosion factory mm-hmm. and you start hearing explosions, you don't need to wait for your supervisor to say, okay, I guess you can let nature take over and I guess you mm-hmm. can obey your base instincts of flight.
That's right. Run. Jump that 6-foot fence and head home.
Oh, I bet people did. Mm-hmm. I bet they didn't want to wait and they were just booting each other over.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you are in the North Jersey area and you want to see evidence of the Kingsland explosion, you can. There is still a smokestack still visible from the Kingsland munitions factory. What's interesting is that the Historical Society is not sure that this smokestack is actually from the Kingsland factory. It's just, well, that's an old smokestack, and we guess that's where the factory kind of was.
Where in Lyndhurst is this? Do we have an address on this? Because my kids go to daycare in Lyndhurst, and I'm pretty sure there's a smokestack nearby.
I think that's it. I'll give you the address. The park where you can see the smokestack is located on Clay Avenue between Valley Brook Avenue and Wall Street West. Anyone who is not within a 3-mile radius of us, that is worthless information.
Yes.
But for you, that's worthful.
Most of our listeners will probably be, our spouses. So... this is actually useful information to them.
So the listenership is between 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Now it's time for Nickelodeon. It's hard to imagine what the world of 1917 is like. So Nickelodeon is your way of finding out via the magic of movies. Every week we'll recommend a different movie either filmed in 1917 or taking place in 1917. This week we are featuring a movie filmed in 1995, but taking place in 1917.
Okay.
It has one of the longest, most cumbersome titles in maybe the history of movies. It is The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill and Came Down a Mountain.
With Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant, yes. Question number one, have you seen this movie?
No.
No, okay.
No, have you?
I did. I don't remember it very well. From what I was reading on Wikipedia... I don't need to mention my sources all the time, especially if they're just Wikipedia.
Because that's... Do you have any source other than Wikipedia?
I also have what my daughters use for fourth grade book reports. Because they're not allowed to use Wikipedia, and they're more professional than I am. But the summaries I read said that it takes place in Wales. And I've watched this movie... I guess I didn't know much of anything about Wales at the time, other than that it was a part of England. And I'm sure Welsh people would say, no, we're not a part of England. We're you know, an over-shoulder, territorial, disputed region. I don't understand the difference between the UK and Great Britain and England.
If you're, what do you do about it, Welshy?
But I do remember the plot, which is that Hugh Grant plays a surveyor. This is one of those surveying movies.
I have seen this movie.
You have seen this movie?
I have, yes.
Wait, well, I said surveyor and that unlocked it for you?
I haven't seen that many movies with surveyors, so therefore.
So he was going to a town that was famous for having a local mountain. And he climbs to the top and he uses his surveying, not a trident, I don't know what it's called, but there's probably a try in it. It's like, you know, the surveying tripod.
And then they look through it.
They look through it, and they look at the other mountain, and they measure, and there's trigonometry or something involved, and they're able to measure the height of the mountain. And they a mountain, according to English law, was 1,000 feet high, and this one was 30 feet short of being a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So he came back and said, sorry, you guys don't have a mountain, you have a hill.
Yes.
And so the townspeople said...
Well, he probably said it in metric.
I'm not sure if he said it in metric. Maybe he did. I bet he did say it in meters.
Mm-hmm.
So he said it's 9,370. Oh, I don't know math. At this, it's too late at night for me to subtract 30 from 1,000. That is no longer a skill I am capable of doing as an adult many years removed from high school. The people of a town conspire to keep him in the town for days and days and days. And meanwhile, they start bringing clods of dirt up and putting it on top of the mm-hmm. hill. Because if they add 30 feet, they can then get their town is being called a mountain.
What's in it for them to be a mountain?
Well, that's the only thing they got going. They've got like one pub.
I would say, is there like an evil benefit to having a mountain versus a hill?
It's just local pride.
Right.
On to birthdays. So having a birthday this week, exactly 100 years ago today, is Maharishi Mahesh Yogi.
Mm-hmm.
He was born January 12th, 1917. You probably know him best as the guru who the Beatles went to see in India.
Yes.
State of his ashram.
The transcendental meditation guy.
Yes. Yes. Now, what's interesting is that people are very certain he was born on January 12th. That's his birthday. They don't know his birth year. He apparently fudged this, and he said multiple birth years.
Mm-hmm.
So some people have 1917. Some people have 1911. Some people have 1918.
Did he lie to be younger or older?
It looks like if he had three different times, he lied to be older and younger.
Mm-hmm.
Either that or he just kept on making himself younger. But when you think of him, he's like the Indian Santa Claus. He's the old guy with the long white hair and the big smile. Why would you lie about being... younger. Wait, so he's lying to say he's older.
Yes, like,
yes.
Yoga has done so much for him that he's...
Who wants to go see a 39-year-old yoga? No one wants to.
No.
No. No, you say you're 51, and you have the big beard, maybe you can dye it white. There's lots of ways that you can make yourself look older. I bet he smoked a lot of cigarettes, hit the hooch a lot.
It was recommended to me recently that I lie about my age. By certain industry people. I was told to shave 5 years off.
Did they say anything else to shave? Because your beard is looking a little scraggly.
Is it?
Hmm? Yeah, you don't have a beard trimmer?
I do.
You do?
I guess a needle touch-up. You know.
I can see like fly-offs, like whiskers that are like an inch and a half wide.
Oh, well, I'll take care of that for next show.
Not that anyone else could
do that. No, I'll still take 5 years off and be younger. Not a beard. Don't take my beard off.
Just take the age off.
Yeah. David Brenner, I got to know him a little bit
mm-hmm.
before he died. And
died at 27, such a young man.
Well, here's the thing. He told me he lied about his age for years and said he was 11 years younger than he was.
11 years?
And that's what tripped him up eventually.
Oh.
He eventually got caught because he couldn't do the math anymore.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was like, if he did 10 years, he's like, yeah, I could do 10 years. But like, once you start saying 11 years... Like, he'd always accidentally, make it 9 years instead of 11. He'd take away one instead of add one onto it.
Yeah, that would be tough, especially for someone going into their senior years to keep going up, keep with mm-hmm. that lie.
Yeah.
So, in honor of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, I have a quiz for you. I have a series of quotes. You need to tell me if these quotes are from Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, from Yogi Berra, who got his nickname from this guy, or from Yogi Bear.
Is that really where... Wait, that's not where Yogi Berra got his nickname.
It's not.
It can't be.
I think it is. I've been to the Yogi Berra Museum.
You wasn't think Yogi Berra had any awareness.
I don't think he named himself. You don't give yourself a nickname. Other people give you nicknames. And I think people heard his unusual musings and thought, you know what? He sounds like a yogi. We're going to call him Yogi.
See, I'm picturing it came from some like offensive term for Italians that was thrown around back then.
I'm going to check this up right now and see what his real name is. Lawrence Peter Yogi Berra.
All right. Well, where did the name come from? You know, there are sources other than Wikipedia. You know this, right?
Not to me.
Let me do my own research.
He received his famous nickname because he looked like a Hindu yogi when he sat around with his arms and legs crossed.
Really?
Yes. he had an unusual build for a ball player. Yeah. He doesn't look like the tall, skinny guy or the, you know, the built, muscly guy.
No.
No, he kind of looked like he had some sort of terrible accident, and they put him back together as best they could.
He looked kind of like a guy who, like, you know, like served you Sausage and Peppers. Yeah. He'd be running the Sausage and Pepper stand at a fair.
And he's a local New Jersey guy. He spent his last couple of years in Montclair, right nearby us.
Mm-hmm. Nowhere near the Kingsland explosion.
So, the quiz for you. Here's the first question. Who said, when you come to a fork in the road, take it?
That would be Yogi.
All three are Yogis. You got to be more specific.
All right, Yogi Berra.
Okay. I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to make that symbol that looks like a T and an F on a true and false quiz.
That's right.
Yeah. But it doesn't work if there's 10 in a row and you just see the same symbol over and over again. People are wise to you. Okay. Next quote. Live long the world in peace, happiness, prosperity, and freedom from suffering.
Boo boo. Yes, that would be Yogi. What's his name again?
Maharishi Mahesh Yogi.
I'll say Maharishi.
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 Okay, cool. Hey, Boo Boo, look at those picnic baskets.
Yogi Bear.
Yes. Although it's conceivable that Yogi Berra said it while quoting Yogi Bear.
And we have no proof that the Maharishi didn't enjoy a picnic.
No. I'm smarter than the average bear.
Okay. I'm assuming all of them are, but Yogi Bear is the one who said it.
Yes. Next quote. Nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded.
A famous yogiism by Yogi Berra.
Yes. That is, I think, my all-time favorite Yogi Berra quote. Mm-hmm. That's why I included it.
You know Yogi Berra owned the bowling alley right around here, too? With Phil Rizzuto?
They co-owned it?
Yeah, there's a bowling alley over in Clifton called Rizzuto Berra.
You know, I think I've been there. I think I was there for a birthday party. I didn't realize that
it closed down in the... When I was a kid, they changed to Astro Bowl.
Oh,
this
okay.
is like in the early 80s, so I don't think you've been there.
Oh, okay. Well, I was to a bowling alley party in Clifton.
Yes.
And that may...
may have been that bowling alley.
It may have been that bowling alley, just on a different name.
Yeah, but became an Astro Bowl. Now it's an... I believe it's an AC Moore now.
I didn't have a great time going there, but that was because I didn't bowl. When you take your kids to a bowling alley party and you don't bowl. You mm-hmm. just watch them bowl.
Why didn't you bowl?
You weren't allowed to bowl. My job was to hold her coat.
What?
This is when your kids get older and you take them to birthday parties.
Oh, you weren't. I thought you went there as a kid.
No.
Then you definitely didn't go to this place. Oh, it closed down. Like
okay,
like 20 years ago. I thought you went there as a kid.
No.
You took so kids still do bowling parties.
Yeah, the birthday party industry is bigger than ever.
I have kids too. Mine aren't old enough to get invited anywhere.
Yeah, well, when they are, they'll have movie parties. They'll have bowling alley parties. They'll have princess parties.
This is every weekend, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much every weekend. So get used to seeing like the same five dads over and over again as you stand holding your 8-ounce cup of warm Diet Coke and. Find the same small talk to talk about. Okay, we have four more quotes.
Okay.
And then we're done with the quiz. Transcendental meditation is something that can be defined as a means to do what one wants to do in a better way, a right way, for maximum results.
That Yogi Berra says some wacky shit. Man. That guy. Oh, boy.
Yeah, well, his rings were tight, and he wasn't having a good day, so he wasn't as eloquent as he normally is. Okay, that was the Maharishi. I didn't say all the things I said.
Yogi Berra.
Yes. Guess what I just did in the woods.
I don't think Yogi Berra ever said that. Yogi Berra talked about, like, crap, like crapping in a cartoon? This happened?
I haven't seen many Yogi Bears, but there are some lost episodes.
What do I mean that they did that new updated one with Dan Aykroyd?
Yeah.
Maybe he did, because I was being shocked by this, because when they did the remake of Alvin and the Chipmunks,
mm-hmm.
Alvin eats a turd.
He does?
Yeah, at one point, like, David Seville is like, hey, wait a minute, what's that on the couch? And there's like a little, like, you know, like pellet.
Uh-huh.
And Alvin goes,
Dave, that's a raisin. And Dave's like, well, I don't know about this. And I was like, it's a raisin, Dave. It's a raisin. Look. And he takes it and eats it. And then Dave's like, all right. And he leaves. And Alvin looks at Theodore and goes, you owe me. Alvin, he ate a turd.
I've seen this movie twice with my kids, and I think I blocked that scene out both times.
No, it's... Because I'm thinking about, like watch it when it was on, like, Saturday mornings when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
How weird that would be if there was an episode where Alvin just ate, like, a steamy turd.
I'm thinking now that... That you know how like simplistic characters will only be given one personality trait? Like, oh, there's Simon. He's smart. And there's Theodore. He's nice. There's Alvin.
he loves turds. So I thought maybe in the remake of Yogi Bear, I thought maybe he actually got a little blue like that.
Bringing it back. Okay, final quote. Shut the hell up, Ringo. That one, I believe, is Maharishi Mahesh Yogi.
Mm-hmm.
Unsourced, but everyone has to say it at a certain point. And that wraps up our episode. Join us next week when we are going to talk about, let's see what else is going on in the world. The death of Admiral Dewey, the Silvertown explosion. There's a lot of explosions going on every week. And the new invention of calories. Until next week, see you in 100 years. Ahoy hoy!
Ahoy hoy!